It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Wisconsin has been under a haze of smoke this summer as wildfires blaze in Canada.
The smoke is considered unhealthy to breathe, and the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources has issued several air quality alerts this summer on days when the air is in the red zone, which is considered unhealthy for everyone.
Last week, 7 of the 10 places with the worst air quality in the country were counties in Wisconsin, including Waukesha and Jefferson counties.
That's according to data from Air Now, a program that partners with state, local, and tribal agencies to track the air quality index around the country.
Craig Czarnecki is Air Management Outreach Coordinator at the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. Craig, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
Well, we had record poor air quality 2 years ago, summer 2023. A lot of wildfire smoke coming into Wisconsin. Felt it affecting our lives. And I, and maybe other people, thought, okay, this is a fluke, a one-off maybe. Well, now here we are again this summer with a lot of wildfire smoke. How do we know, do we know if this is, you know, a thing, a new normal for Wisconsin?
Yeah, it certainly seems that way based off, the last couple years. We are in the midst of the second worst wildfire season on record for Canada, behind only that 2023 season. The Canadian Interagency Forest Fire Center says there's about 750 or so active fires right now. Those are mainly across Manitoba and Saskatchewan. That's already burned about 16 million acres of land, which is roughly the size of West Virginia. We've certainly been feeling the impacts of those large fires here kind of throughout the summer.
What determines if a Canadian wildfire out west, what determines if that smoke ends up here in Wisconsin? Because it's not a sure thing, right?
That's true. It very much is weather dependent. So it really depends on weather systems and patterns. Once that wildfire smoke is separated from fires, you know, it raises up high into the atmosphere, and then those smoke plumes can be transported long distances by high and low pressure systems. And that is pretty much what we saw last week. There was a very slow moving high pressure system that kind of started last Tuesday, and then it just kind of sat there and hung out kind of over the upper Midwest through much of the week. And we're finally seeing some improvements today. But yeah, very much weather system dependent on whether or not, you know, that wildfire smoke reaches us, and then also whether or not it actually reaches the ground.
Now, looking at these Canadian wildfires for a moment, we've had a couple of members of Congress from Wisconsin sign on to letters, now a state lawmaker saying, hey, Canada, do a better job managing your wildfires. As you understand it, is this a Canadian wildfire management problem, or are there more systemic things going on that are making these big wildfires more likely?
Yeah, I think there's definitely a number of different factors at play here. Wildfire management may play a role, but there are also, you know, a number of other factors that are in play here. Traditionally, you know, wildfire smoke has affected Wisconsin more often in the late summer, but in recent years, that's been happening, you know, earlier, like in springtime, for example. You know, Canada's had less precipitation. They've had shorter winters, not as much snowpack. Warmer seasons, you know, this has all contributed to these really ideal conditions for these wildfires to start. And then once they start, everything is so dry, they're able to spread really quickly. And then on top of that, a lot of these fires are in very remote, very difficult to reach places as well. So they're difficult to put out too. So yeah, long list of reasons why we're feeling these impacts, and they all kind of, yeah, working together to create these impacts that we're feeling this summer.
Let's bring it home to Wisconsin now. What goes into monitoring our air quality around the state?
Yeah, sure thing. So the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, we have 18 PM2.5 monitors across the state. PM2.5 is the main pollutant of concern when we're talking about wildfire smoke. So our network uses very advanced monitoring technology. These monitors, what they're able to do is measure the amount of energy scattered by these particulates through a little stream of air. And then from there, algorithms take over and produce a measured concentration for us, and we're able to take that number, and make it and turn it into a more digestible, easy to understand number, which is the AQI or air quality index. So that's what we use to help convey pollutant concentrations. So we have our air quality monitors, and then on top of that, we do also have air quality forecasters on staff who are looking at different modeling products. They're looking at satellite data and imagery, talking with other forecasters in the upper Midwest to kind of assess, make a forecast, and then ultimately determine whether or not we would issue an advisory. And typically that threshold, when we would issue an advisory, is when that air quality index is expected to reach and then stay at that orange unhealthy for sensitive groups level for at least 4 hours. So that's kind of the criteria that we use.
We got a question from a listener named Carol who emailed, in Marinette, the smoke has been thick for about the last week. We watch air quality measures on our phone weather apps when planning our day. We have found, however, the numbers vary greatly with different sources. My husband's app consistently rates the air quality as substantially worse than my app does, and other sources also vary. Why is there no consistency, even though we're in the same place? Craig, what do we know about different sources of that air quality information?
So regarding discrepancies that people may see in air quality values reported from different sources, different sites may use different algorithms that convert raw air pollution data into a number that we can all understand. That the DNR, we use, we display the AQI based on pollutant concentrations that are collected from our regulatory monitors, and then we use an algorithm that's defined within the Clean Air Act that we have to use. And that's the data that people would see. This is the same data if you're looking at EPA's Air Now maps, the EPA Air Now map or the EPA Air Now fire and smoke map. Those use that same data. Otherwise, there are other platforms out there that may use different algorithms that may not be the standard that we have to use for our regulatory monitors. So there are some variances there depending on what sites you're looking at. But really, if you're looking at multiple sources and you're seeing different numbers, the most reliable are going to be the EPA, Air Now, or the DNR figures.
Back to your data, Craig, how do you communicate to the public? And I understand you're finding more and more ways to get that information out there.
Certainly. So when we do decide to issue an advisory, we immediately send a notification to the National Weather Service. And then very similar to how they would announce maybe a severe thunderstorm warning or something like that, they're able to get that air quality advisory notice out as well. We do also post the advisory to our air quality monitoring map page. We have an email and text service. People can sign up to receive email or text notifications as soon as an advisory is issued, so they'd get that information right away. And then starting in 2023, we also started posting advisory information on the Nextdoor app to affected counties as well. And then in addition to that, we also work closely with the Department of Health and the Department of Public Instruction. We have an email list that we send out to our contacts there, letting them know that an advisory is coming so they can help kind of prepare for those situations.
Often when we look at these advisories, if we're in the middle levels of wildfire smoke, there might be something about, people in sensitive groups should take precautions. Who are we talking to?
Yeah, so people in sensitive groups are going to be anyone with any kind of upper respiratory issues or heart or lung issues, people with asthma, and then children, the elderly, those who are pregnant, and then people who spend a lot of time outdoors working, for example. So those are going to be people in sensitive groups, and they're going to be kind of the most prone to feeling the effects of wildfire smoke. That's typically why we issue advisories once we hit that orange unhealthy for sensitive groups level.
And as we wrap up, what are our health worries about exposure to high levels of this particular particulate, the PM2.5?
Yeah, so these can cause a number of different health issues, a lot of upper respiratory problems. These PM2.5 particles are very small and can actually get into your bloodstream. But then symptoms, you know, eye and respiratory tract irritation, coughing, wheezing, difficulty breathing. And then, like I said, it can increase the risk of asthma attacks. Long-term exposure, you know, can increase your risks of heart and cardiovascular issues. So, yeah, a long list of health impacts. And I know the CDC said in 2023, when we had all the wildfire smoke impacts then, asthma-associated ER visits jumped about 20%. So there is a correlation there between, you know, asthma attacks and wildfire smoke for sure.
Craig, we'll leave it there. Thanks a lot for joining us.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
That's Craig Czarnecki, Air Management Outreach Coordinator at the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. We're talking about how wildfire smoke from Canada is affecting Wisconsin's air quality this summer. Now we turn to a researcher in Colorado, where wildfires have been affecting air quality for a bunch of years. Colleen Reed is Associate Professor of Geography at the University of Colorado Boulder. Her current research looks at how wildfire smoke affects air quality and the health of children in schools and at home. Colleen, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Thanks for having me.
Well, before we get into the science, I want to hear a firsthand report. You're there in Colorado. I understand you've had a lot more smoke impacts than we have in Wisconsin. How have those, especially summers, impacted day-to-day life for you, family, and friends and students in Colorado?
Yeah, I mean, right now we're getting a little bit of impact from the Canadian fires, but we've had not as bad smoke this summer as you've had in Wisconsin, but we're used to it. I think that it's something that Coloradans have been used to checking the air quality index for quite a while. But for us, it's periodic. We have fires that occur nearby where we'll have, you know, smoke local and we can actually have the risk of evacuations. But we also get long range transport from often when the Pacific Northwest is on fire. That's where we get our smoke from. That's from a long distance away.
Some of your research is focused on the Marshall Fire of 2021, one of the most destructive wildfires in Colorado's history. What have you learned about the impact of air pollution from studying that particular fire?
That particular fire was very devastating because it happened in my community and people I know were affected. But it was also, as you said, highly destructive. So over 1,000 structures were burned within a matter of about 8 hours. And there were so many things that were really interesting about that fire. I'm used to studying fires that are predominantly burning vegetation. And what was predominantly burned in that fire was houses. It started in grasslands. So it started in wildlands, but then it spread really quickly into suburban areas just south of Boulder, which is where I'm located. And most of what burned once it caught fire to homes were other homes and vehicles. And previous research by others had found that that can cause emissions that are more toxic than when vegetation is burned. There's lots more metals, and some of the gases that are created by the combustion can be different concentrations of different toxic gases. And then another thing that I want to, and I think we're getting more and more of these wildland urban interface fires where it starts in wildlands, but soon also consumes lots of human-made materials, such as the Los Angeles fires that happened earlier this year, as well as, you know, the Lahaina fire in Hawaii. There's unfortunately more and more of these that are happening. But what we had for air quality impacts were more for the people whose homes were not destroyed by the fire, but were, you know, in the same community. They had very high winds. We had 100-mile-per-hour gusts that day that were blowing smoke into their homes through every crevice. They had ash everywhere. They had smoke that was absorbed into all porous materials in their homes, which through this process I learned includes not just, you know, carpets and couches, but also drywall is porous. And so all of those gases got absorbed into the home. And the cleaning process for that was really hard because there was really no research that we could basically, because this happened right by a university, all of us who study that here were contacted about what people should do. And we were surprised that we couldn't find much research on this sort of smoke damaged homes. And so we went in to try and investigate that more.
Here's something I wonder about. Now, let's just take wildfire smoke. Still a health concern, as we're hearing from Craig, can trigger things like asthma attacks or other upper respiratory condition. Do we know about long-term impacts, though, if people are repeatedly exposed over, you know, months of a summer or a year to year, is this could have a cumulative long-term impact?
That is such a good question, and we're starting to be able to answer that. There's been a few more recent studies that have been looking at long-term exposure to wildfire smoke and linking it to a variety of health impacts, such as, you know, increased mortality or cardiovascular events. The challenge with the long-term studies that I think is happening, and it's a big discussion among researchers who study wildfire smoke and health, is that often long-term air pollution epidemiology studies will look at the annual average of PM2.5 and link it to health outcomes, you know, following people up over, you know, decades to see what the long-term impact of exposure to PM2.5 is. The challenge with wildfire smoke is it's different from other pollutants. So we have PM2.5 from anything that combusts. So we have it, we have all sorts of other sources of PM2.5, like vehicle emissions or industrial emissions. Those are pretty constant over time versus wildfire smoke is really episodic. So you could have in one place, you're getting the same annual average for one really bad wildfire over a 2-week period of time, or you could have it for a lot of smaller wildfires at lower concentrations over a year. And so researchers are now asking, is there something different about, you know, these really high concentration air pollution events versus lots of smaller events? And we don't have the answers to that at this point in time.
It sounds like there's a lot we don't know yet. And the urgency of knowing it seems to go up from year to year. Are you hoping to see more of this kind of research into the health impacts of wildfire smoke?
I am. I also think, though, that we do have a lot of evidence from other sources of PM2.5. Like, we know that it's not good for your health. And so we can try to do things to protect people's health now while we wait for that evidence to come out. And so I want to see more studies into ways that we can protect people's health now. For example, one of the reasons that I'm doing the study that you mentioned about schools is because there was this uncertainty about whether schools should stay open during wildfire smoke events, because we don't know if schools or homes are actually safer indoor air quality for students. And so we wanted to gather that data because really there was no data on it. And so trying to figure out things like that, because if we can make schools clean air spaces for all kids to have at least for 7 hours a day, I think that that's a huge step towards protecting children from this exposure. And so I think it's that kind of research that I'm hoping to see, so that even while we wait for more information about long-term health impacts, we can still protect people's health now.
Colleen, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us.
Thank you.
That was Colleen Reed, Associate Professor of Geography at the University of Colorado Boulder, telling us about her research on the health impacts of wildfire smoke. Earlier, we heard from Craig Czarnecki, Air Management Outreach Coordinator at the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources.